8. Regarding mehr or dower. Mehr is a sum of money or something in kind which a husband is required to pay to his wife at the time of marriage or make a commitment that it shall be paid later. It is erroneously believed by some that mehr is the price of owning a wife. In reality, the payment of mehr has a deep symbolic significance. Islam has entrusted the husband with the responsibility of supporting his wife and children. It is he who must earn to fulfill the requirements of the family. The mehr money is only a token of this responsibility. In other words, when a man pays this sum, he makes a symbolic expression of the fact that he has taken the financial responsibility of the woman he intends taking as his wife. Consequently, it is in the spirit of this commitment that he pay the agreed sum before he takes home the bride. It would not be out of place to mention that the amount of the mehr money, as the Quran asserts, should be fixed, keeping in view the social customs and traditions of a society. The Quran states, وَآتُوهُنَّ أُجُورَهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, and pay them their dowers according to the custom. Surah number 4, verse 25. Also, as mentioned above, it is in the fitness of things that the amount be paid to the wife as soon as possible, since it symbolizes one of the primary responsibilities of the husband. 9. Women outnumbering men in hell. The following hadith is often presented to support the view that women will outnumber men in hell. Abu Sayyid al-Khudri reported, Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam went out to the place of prayer on the day of Eid al-Adha or Fitr. So he passed by a group of women and said to them, O women, give charity, for I have been shown the majority amongst you as the inmates of hell. They said, Allah's Messenger, wherefore? He replied, It is because you curse one another very much and show ungratefulness to your husbands. Al-Bukhari, Al-Jami As-Sahih, Volume 1, page 116, Hadith number 298. This inference is incorrect and has arisen by not properly appreciating a particular style of communication used in certain ahadith which depict dreams of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Such dreams are a source of revelation for the prophets of God, and in them they are shown certain images by the Almighty for the purpose of educating the believers. As a principle, all such dreams are not to be interpreted literally. They contain realities which are depicted in symbolic form. Symbolic representation is a very subtle and powerful way of expression. Facts seem veiled, yet for him who pauses to ponder, they are the most evident. They move a person in the manner poetry does. They ignite in a person the spark to look behind the apparent. They urge him to reflect and to meditate, and then to discover and to infer. They educate him without rousing his prejudice. The prophets of God have effectively employed this technique of communication. The words and discourses of the prophets Joseph and Jesus, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for example, are full of powerful parables and subtle symbolism. The dream of the prophet Joseph, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the way he interpreted it is mentioned in the Quran also. If he saw in his dream the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down before him in prostration, he knew that these heavenly bodies symbolized certain personalities. The ahadith which depict more women in hell should also be interpreted keeping in view this basic principle. These ahadith do not delineate the population of women in hell, since this would be a literal interpretation. On the contrary, they just caution them that there are certain deeds which they do a lot and which therefore could be more instrumental in taking them to hell. So they should avoid them. In other words, the symbolism is causative in nature. In the above quoted hadith, the cause has been symbolized to warn women of something which they often do. 10. Sex with female war captives. Among many other misconceptions about Islam is the notion that it gives sanction to slavery and permits its followers to enslave prisoners of war, particularly women, and establish extramarital relations with them. The fact is that Islam has not the slightest link with slavery and concubinage. On the contrary, it completely forbids these practices. It is quite outrageous to associate such an atrocious thing with a religion revealed to upgrade humanity. The point which needs to be appreciated, and which perhaps is the real cause of the misconception that Islam had adopted a gradual process to abolish the institution of slavery, because of the social conditions prevalent in Arabia at that time. It must be kept in mind that slavery was an integral part of the pre-Islamic Arab society. There were scores of slave men and women in almost every house. This was largely due to two reasons. First, during those times, the standard practice of dispensing with the prisoners of war was to distribute them as slaves among the army which captured them. Second, there were extensive slave markets in Arabia in that period where men and women of all ages were sold like commodities. In these circumstances, in which slavery had become an essential constituent of the Arab society, Islam adopted a gradual way to eliminate it. An immediate order of prohibition would have created immense social and economic problems. It would have become impossible for the society to cater for the needs of a large army of slaves who were otherwise dependent on various families. Also, the national treasury was in no position to provide them all on a permanent basis. A large number among them were old and incapable of supporting themselves. The only alternative left for them if they were instantly freed would have been to turn to beggary and become an economic burden on the society. The question of slave girls and women was even more critical, keeping in view their own low moral standards. Freeing them all of a sudden would have only resulted in a tremendous increase in brothels. Perhaps the reason behind this gradual eradication can be understood better if one considers the position which interest occupies in the economy of many Muslim countries today. No one can refute that the economies of these countries are interest-oriented. How the parasite of interest has crippled their national economies is apparent to every keen eye. However, there is no denying the fact that without it, their economic systems cannot sustain themselves. Every reasonable person will acknowledge that today, if a government wishes to rid the economy of this menace, then, in spite of its utter prohibition in Islam, it will have to adopt a gradual methodology. During this interim period, interest-based deals will have to be tolerated, and temporary laws will have to be enacted to handle them, just as the Quran had given certain provisional directives about slaves during the interim period of their gradual eradication. An alternative economic framework would have to be steadily incorporated in place of the existing one. A sudden abolition without any parallel base will only hasten the total collapse of the economic system, which of course will be disastrous for that country. To avert a similar disaster and to ward off a similar catastrophe, 1400 years ago, Islam had adopted a progressive and gradual scheme to do away with the inhuman institution of slavery. Various directives were given at various stages, because of which it gradually became possible for this evil to be eradicated from the society. They are summarized below from Javed Ahmed Ghamidi's Mizan. 1. In the very beginning of its revelation, the Quran regarded emancipation of slaves as a great virtue and urged people in a very effective way to do so. The tremendous appeal found in the words it adopted, that is, Fakku Rakaba, or release of necks, can be well imagined by a person who has flair for the language. It is evident from the context of such expressions, wherever they are found in the Quran, that it has regarded this virtue to be the first as well as the greatest step in pleasing God. In a similar manner, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam also urged Muslims to liberate humanity from the yoke of slavery in the following words: whoever liberated a Muslim slave, the Almighty in return for every limb of that slave would shield every limb of that person from hell. Muslim, Al-Jami As-Sahih, Volume 2, page 1147, Hadith number 1509. 2. People were urged that until they free their slaves, they should treat them with kindness. The way their masters had total and unchecked control in them in the age of Jahiliyyah was put to an end. They were told that slaves are human beings too, and no one should in any way violate the rights they possess as human beings. Abu Hurairah رضي الله عنه narrated from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, a slave has a right to food and clothing, and he shall not be asked to carry out an errand that is beyond him. Muslim, Al-Jami As-Sahih, Volume 3, page 1284, Hadith number 1662. Abu Dharr Ghifari رضي الله عنه narrates from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they are your brothers. The Almighty has made them subservient to you. So, whatever you eat, feed them with it. Whatever you wear, clothe them with it, and never ask them to do something which is beyond them. And if there is such a task, then help them out with it. Muslim, Al-Jami'a Sahih, Volume 3, page 1282, Hadith number 1661. Ibn Umar radiallahu anhu narrates from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, whoever slapped a slave or beat him up should atone this sin by liberating him. Muslim, Al-Jami'a Sahih, Volume 3, page 1657, Hadith number 1279. Abu Masood radiallahu anhu says, once when I was beating my slave, I heard a voice from behind me, O Abu Masood, you should know that the Almighty has more power over you. When I turned back, I found that it was the Prophet. I immediately remarked, O Messenger of God, I liberate him for the sake of God. The Prophet replied, had you not done this, you would have been given the punishment of the fire. Muslim, Al-Jami'a Sahih, Volume 3, page 1659, Hadith number 1281. Ibn Umar radiallahu anhu narrates that once a person came to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and asked, how many times should we forgive our servant? At this the Prophet kept quiet. He asked again, and the Prophet again kept silent. Upon being asked the third time, the Prophet answered, 70 times a day. Abu Dawud, Sunan, Volume 4, page 341, Hadith number 5164. 3. In case of unintentional murder, zihar, and other similar offenses, liberating a slave was regarded as their atonement and sadaqah. 4. It was directed to marry off slave men and slave women who were capable of marriage so that they could become equivalent in status, both morally and socially, to other members of the society. 5. If a person were to marry a slave woman of someone, great care was exercised, since this could result in a clash between ownership and conjugal rights. However, such people were told that if they did not have the means to marry free women, they could marry, with the permission of their masters, slave women who were Muslims and were also kept chaste. In such marriages, they must pay their dowers so that this could bring them gradually equal in status to free women. The Quran states, وَمَنْ لَمْ يَسْتَطِعْ مِنْكُمْ طَوْلًا أَنْ يَنْكِحَ الْمُحْصَنَاتِ الْمُؤْمِنَاتِ فَمِمَّا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ مِنْ فَتَيَاتِكُمُ الْمُؤْمِنَاتِ وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِإِيمَانِكُمْ بَعْضُكُمْ مِنْ بَعْضٍ فَانْكِحُوهُنَّ بِإِذْنِ أَهْلِهِنَّ وَآتُوهُنَّ أُجُورَهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ مُحْصَنَاتٍ غَيْرَ مُسَافِحَاتٍ وَلَا مُتَّخِذَاتِ أَخْدَانٍ ذَلِكَ لِمَنْ خَشِيَ الْعَنَتَ مِنْكُمْ وَأَنْ تَصْبِرُوا خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. And if any one of you does not have the means wherewith to wed free believing women, he may wed believing girls from among those whom you own. And Allah has full knowledge about your faith. You are from one another, so wed them with the permission of their owners, and give them their dowers, according to the norms. The only condition is that they should be kept chaste, neither being lustful, nor taking paramours. This permission is for those among you who fear sin, but it is better for you that you practice self-restraint, and God is ever-forgiving, most merciful. Surah number 4, verse 25. 6. In the heads of zakah, a specific head, fir riqab, or for freeing necks, was instituted so that the campaign of slave emancipation could receive impetus from the public treasury. 7. Fornication was regarded as an offense, as a result of which prostitution centers that were operated by people on the basis of their slave women were shut down automatically. And if someone tried to go on secretly running this business, he was given exemplary punishment. 8. People were told that they were all slaves of God, and so, instead of the words abd, or slave man, and amma, or slave woman, the words used should be fata, or boy, and fatat, or girl, so that the psyche about them should change, and a change is brought about in age-old concepts. 9. A big source of the institution of slavery at the advent of the last Prophet Muhammad was the prisoners of war. When such a situation arose for the Muslims, the Quran emphasized that they cannot be kept as slaves and must be kept as prisoners of war. After this, if they were to be released, then there were two possibilities. They could be freed either by accepting ransom or as a favor by not taking any ransom money. No other option was available to the Muslims. 10. Finally, the following directive was given. وَالَّذِينَ يَبْتَغُونَ الْكِتَابَ بِمَّا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ فَكَاتِبُوهُمْ إِنْ عَلِمْتُمْ فِيهِمْ خَيْرًا وَآتُوهُمْ مِمَّا لِلَّهِ الَّذِي آتَاكُمْ. And those of your slaves who ask for mukatabat, give it to them if you know any good in them. And for this, give them out of the wealth which God has given to you. Surah number 24, verse 33. The above quoted verse of Surah An-Nur mentions the directive of mukatabat. It is a term which means that a slave make a contract with his master according to which he would be required to pay a certain sum of money in a specific period of time or carry out a specific service for his master. Once he successfully fulfills either of these two options, he would stand liberated. In the above quoted verse, the Almighty has directed the Muslims to necessarily accept this contract made by a slave if he wants to make it and has the required ability to become financially independent. It is further stated that the Muslim government should spend money from the public treasury, which here is called the treasury of God, in helping such slaves. It is evident from the words of the verse that just as the right of mukatabat was granted to slave men, it was also granted to slave women. This, in other words, was in fact a declaration that slaves could now be masters of their destiny and could liberate themselves whenever they wanted.